Dao Te Ching, verse 3. By not exalting the talented, you will cause the people to cease from rivalry and contention. By not prizing goods hard to get, you will cause the people to cease from robbing and stealing. By not displaying what is desirable, you will cause the people's hearts to remain undisturbed. Therefore, the sage's way of governing begins by emptying the hearts of desires, filling the belly with food, weakening the ambitions, toughening the bones. In this way, he will cause the people to remain without knowledge and without desire, and prevent the knowing ones from any ado. Practice non-ado, and everything will be in order. The Tao is like an empty bowl, which in being used can never be filled up. Fathomless, it seems to be the origin of all things. It blunts all sharp edges. It unties all tangles. It harmonizes all lights. It unites the world into one whole, hidden in the deeps, yet it seems to exist forever. I don't know whose child it is. It seems to be the common ancestor of all, the father of things. Hi. It's good to see you. I'm glad you're here. This is another episode by me, myself, and I. And we're going to be discussing some topics and going into some musings, some perturbations of thought, you know, and I hope that we can reach a point where we can find some intriguing curiosity. You know, what is curiosity? How would you define the word? Like, take a second. What does that word hold for you? And words themselves, you know, words have a lot of power. It's communication. It's not all of communication. You know, there's a lot of nonverbal communication that we use as well. But words themselves are the messages that we use to pass along our feelings and our thoughts on matters and subjects to other people. And I have often contemplated what it means to have this power, you know, and maybe our wordplay and our language games are not as unique. You know, orcas have been observed having separate vocal patterns in different periods of the world. And this, to me, speaks of dialect. This means a dialect is when you can have one language, like, say, English, and then in the south of the United States and in the north, you know, there's way different accents, even though it's all the same language. And then you go across the pond to Britain or to Australia, you know, and English holds even more power. That's vastly different. But language itself is a tool. It's not inherently anything real. You know, words, what did I always hear when I was a child? Sticks and stones can never hurt you, or sticks and stones can break your bones, but words can never hurt me or hurt you. And that was supposed to be some sort of placation given to you to say that these words, they feel painful and they feel like sticks and stones. That's the thing I always got from it, was that the words themselves, they do feel like sticks and stones. And that power that you hold when you throw your words out there. I'd like to tell an analogy that I've played around with, and I don't know if it's unique. I don't feel like it's unique, and I'm sure I've read it somewhere where it's some sort of collection of several different ideas put together. But picture this. We have a series of islands, and say an island chain, and it's very lonely, so this might sound sad, but I'm not a sad person, so I hope you don't see this as some sort of reflection of how I don't, it could appear lonely, but I don't, I just see it as one of the challenges that we have to surmount, and why it's so important to give so much effort towards your fellow human. So imagine this, we're all sitting on these islands, and we all have these similar tools, you know, like we have the similar, like all these islands, they have similar circumstances, they have similar environments. And so I have the ability to craft, you know, the vesicle that I can use to ship off these things that I'm creating. And these things that I'm creating are messages. Like, and I always kind of think of message in the bottle, like that old rock song, you know, message in a bottle. You know, sorry for my horrible singing voice. But so we all have the ability, and we all seem to have this natural inclination to use the tool, you know. And I guess this might defeat, because with nurture, you know, you're not alone. But I see it kind of as this very isolated existence. So that's how I feel sometimes. So we're sitting on these islands, and we have the ability to craft these bottles and craft these messages. And we write these things because there's this intense yearning. There's this need to be heard. And I don't feel that I am alone in saying that this need to feel heard is very important. It might be as important as eating and drinking, at least for our sanity to be complete humans, you know. So we need to be heard, and somehow maybe we can see these islands, but there's massive rip currents or something, I don't know. And so, like, we're shipping off these bottles, and we're just like, fuck it, you know, like, you know, we write down this message and we send it out. But our vesicles aren't perfect, you know, our bottles aren't, you know, they're not supremely trustworthy, you know, but we're hoping. So we send out these bottles, and they make it to another island, you know. But just because we have the same tools to send out these bottles to other places, and we have that knowledge, who's to say that what I scratch inside that bottle is going to make it all the way across? What if water gets into the bottle? Like, I feel like there's been very few instances where you get a perfect message in a bottle. Maybe that's just a bias, but suppose that there's a different dialect of writing, you know, like, and there's a simple, just a, like maybe we wrote too small, wrote too big, you know, like, and that's just like a semblance of how difficult I see it is to pass along a message. And this is an analogy for just a simple conversation, you know, and I know it could be perceived as rather depressing, but, you know, I had this moment where I did fall pretty low because I was concerned about my ability to be able to communicate to people, you know. And I know you've probably seen it on the internet, because it's the most prevalent on the internet. And when you're talking with strangers, you know, it's very easy. You know, I can feel when somebody hasn't read my message all the way through. And at the same time, I have caught myself in the position where I've gotten halfway through a message, and I'm so eager to reply that I just go to the comment bar. And that's depressing for me, you know, because I'm not proud of that, you know, like, and so every time I catch myself there, I'm like, you know what, fuck you, man, doesn't matter what you have to say, you sit down right here, and you're gonna finish this person's message, doesn't matter what they're thinking, if you disagree with it, it doesn't matter, because you're gonna sit down right here, and you're gonna finish this all the way through, because it feels really shitty when you can tell that they, like, are just responding, and, like, so I try to put in bits of what other people have to say, you know. So you have these words. They're very difficult to pass across, you know. I guess that's the gist. I'm going to go back to the Tao. So I read the third verse and the fourth verse of the Tao today. The third verse is a little tricky, because it's one of those ones that, at first for me, pulls across, it makes me flinch. And you have to think that this period of China was incredibly conservative. Think Confucius. I have a lot of difficulties with Confucius. He was placating kings. He was I don't know if you've read Machiavelli. For me, I personally felt a strong relation between Confucius and Machiavelli. You know, when it's coming to keeping power in power, and that disgusts me. So, the third, it goes, by not prizing goods hard to get, you will cause the people to cease from robbing and stealing. So, imagine this an analogy or an allegory for just yourself. You know, when you set up a material object or an activity or a goal, or not even gaining something positive, say you could be avoiding something painful, you know? So I recently had a procedure done. I probably posted an episode before this a couple weeks back concerning what I had to do. And it wasn't that bad. Honestly, I had a pretty bad panic attack going in. I have a bad fear of the institution of the medical profession. And I've often thought if people had come to my house, wow, like if I could have done this on my bed, I don't know, I guess I would have bled everywhere and it would have been a sanitary, but I would have been more comfortable. It's walking into the hospital that severely fucks me up. And, you know, every appointment, as soon as they call, it's the whole routine, the rigmarole. I hate how it's done. It's so drab, you know? Like, it's like the DMV, but instead of the DMV, you're fixing your body, you know? And I hate going in. So as soon as I reached the hospital, and, you know, I've been so stressed for the past couple of months considering it, and I felt so much tension, and so, like, walking in, my heart was just like, bah, 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 bah. And so I sat down on the floor. There's some old people that were just looking at me and judging me, and I just sat cross-legged on the floor underneath the plant, and I just did a whole bunch of deep breathing for like 30 minutes. And that's okay. Like, I'm not even embarrassed to say it. I was just trying to catch myself, you know, and it's hard to put ourselves in these situations. And so I get in, and the nurse there was very kind, and he had spoken to me on the phone many times before, and he was just fantastic, and I was fucked up, you know, I was not looking anybody in the eyes. I was just completely breathing. I was like in complete survival mode, you know, just because that's the kind of fear that this place instills in me. And, you know, and I just sat there, and it was really tough for about an hour. And then they gave me some drugs, and I got Valium, and I got Vicodin, and I got ibuprofen, and I got 10 milligrams of Vicodin. And that's not much opiate for a layman, and I'm no layman when it comes to opiates. And so that's like a Tic Tac of a painkiller. But the Valium, you know, I've always been a big fan of Valium. I'm not a big fan of most of the other benzodiazepines. You know, Xanax is foul. Like, every time I've ever done Xanax, I'll do, like, a very small portion of the chemical, and I've passed out. Like, there's been times where I've taken it, and within 30 minutes, I've fallen completely asleep, and I've woken up at 11 o'clock, and my son hasn't gone to bed yet, and it's just like, fuck that, you know? Like, that's not anxiety relief, that's life relief, because you were, like, for me at least, I'm turned the fuck off. I'm completely asleep, you know? Like, the Valium has always been a benefit. And so the nurse gives me the Valium, and I chewed those fuckers up like old school Excedrin. And, you know, they kicked in pretty quickly, and they helped. You know, a little bit, just a little bit of kick off of that tension that I was feeling. And I just started breathing more, and, you know, I got into a groove, and I started talking to people a little bit, and, you know, you get into a place where I made a very small piece inside my being that I kind of crawled into a little cave. And I wasn't. And time rolls around. They put me in the operating room, and I'm laying down there. And, you know, they put a bunch of blankets up, and I'm not trying to look. The biggest thing for me is just not seeing it, too. And starts numbing up my leg, and I was having varicose veins removed. And so I got about 18 separate puncture wounds along my shin, and they basically put in, for lack of a better word, this kind of like hook. And she yanked out a bunch of shit. And I got a catheter placed in my ankle, and I got a catheter placed in my knee, and I got laser burnt basically from hip to ankle. And so that those arteries are shut down. And, you know, I was pretty lucid, not going to lie. You know, the Valium helped with my nerves, but it hurt like a motherfucker, and I was right there the whole time. There was a point when I looked over at the lady, and I was like, you know, fuck. Is it okay if I curse? She's like, yeah, just don't curse directly at me. And I'm just sitting in this operator. I'm like, fuck you fucking shit fucker. And it was intense. Not going to lie. Absolutely intense. But I put myself through so much hell going into that situation that I was shocked by how, when she actually started doing her work, how quickly my anxiety that I'd carried for so long drifted out. Because this was it. This was the moment. This is just pain. Pain is in your mind. As the old Dune reference goes, you know, pain is the mind killer. But it's a figment. It's a figment of your imagination. It's a chemical response. And the fact that people feel pain differently is a great allusion to how particular your subjective experience and how you are considering that pain is. And you can get through anything. Anybody who's listening, it doesn't matter if it's a physical pain, it doesn't matter if you like fell off a mountain, if you believe in yourself, and I hope you're not on a mountain listening to my fucking podcast, because that's just sad. But you would be surprised the capacity that you have as a living creature on this planet and what you can do. You can do anything. Anything. Dead serious. You'd be surprised by what you can do. And pain, though it's scary, when it happens, you are a tough motherfucker. And you are Superman or Superwoman. Or it's just, it's insane. And so, you know, I'm just sitting there, fuck, fuck, fuck. And 45 minutes goes by and she finishes up and everything's, I got a couple stitches and I got all this shit wrapped up. And I get over there and it's over. It's over, man. Like, that's great. That's a really good thing when you get past something. But here's what brings me to the down. By not prizing goods hard to get. Prizing a good. What is a good? What is something that we want to consume? What is it that we want to get? It's something outside of ourselves. It's that attachment that the Buddha and the Bhagas speak of. And the thing about what we want to get is that there's always a very close connection between what a desire is and what an aversion is. And what is an aversion? I'm sure you probably know what a desire is. It's something that's intense, a craving, you know, like a desire for a cigarette if you're quitting cigarettes. Or I'm going to always go to chemical because that's my easiest reference. But there's desires for other things like attention when you desire a person. And so the flip side of that coin is the aversion. An aversion is not wanting something, not wanting pain, not wanting to do things that you're bored with, not wanting to do something. But not wanting to do something is an attachment, and it's an equal attachment to not wanting to do something as it is to doing something. And that's, it's tough, because to imply that you're on one side of the coin is to imply that you're still on the same coin. It's one thing. Desire, aversion, not wanting something, wanting to get something. That's the same fucking thing. And for the longest time, I feel I at least didn't realize that. And even right now, sitting here, and I'm a young blood, but even now standing right here, I'm not completely convinced that desire and pleasure, because when you're feeling pleasure, you feel like, oh God, this feels great, you know, and chemical or whatever, you know, fuck the world, or I got the person I wanted. And, you know, like people in new relationships, they start to shun their friends. You know, I got what I wanted, fuck them all. And then the desire is like, if I can just get away from this, I'll feel better. So, you know, this traditionalist Chinese approach of talking as a ruler controlling the people, consider it as an allegory of you ruling yourself, and the people are your thoughts, the people are your ideas, and you are the ruler of your own being. So by not prizing the goods hard to get, by not having desires, by not forming these attachments, you will cause your own feelings and ideas to cease from robbing and stealing from your moment. By not displaying what is desirable, by not desiring, by not setting up these things on podiums, because it is a choice to say, this is my big aversion, this is my big desire, this is all I want, this is all I want to get away from. That's a choice. Having events thrust upon you, getting fucked by the world, or getting a blessing, getting some beautiful gift basket from the world. So just, you know, neither of those things really affects who you are. So, attachment, desire, and my operation to kind of pile it in together. I, over my months of stress, I set up this event as my major aversion, as my major event that I had feared, as this major thing that was the bane of my existence. I set it up as this thing, and subconsciously, but almost consciously, I felt that once I got past this, and the whole time I was like, you know, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. But, you know, you'd think like, as soon as I get this operation done, I'm going to be so happy. I'm going to feel so good. As soon as I have to stop being poor, I'm going to feel better. As soon as I stop being sick, I'm going to feel good again. As soon as I, you know, and I'm fucking sorry. If you're suffering out there, I'm really, really sorry. And I feel for you. And I hope you get better soon. But relief of suffering is not going to lift you up past baseline. You lift yourself off baseline. And it's tough and it's hard and it's the hardest bench press you've ever done. But getting past something or gaining something outside yourself is not going to make you better or feel better. It never will, and it never was going to. And that's the biggest illusion. And that's, like, in a sideways way, I think that's what the first verse of the Tao was gaining to. So on to the fourth verse. I don't believe that I called it out, but the first line is, the Tao is like an empty bowl, which in being used can never be filled up. And this goes back to considering Tao as a mother. And what's funny is that the first one that I read of this considers Tao a mother, but this one calls out the Tao as a father figure. And so the Tao is like an empty bowl. It's nothing. It's not something that can be grasped. You know, it's not something that you can obtain, like we were just speaking about, or it's not something that you can relieve yourself from. It's not something that can be held in a container, and a visceral, metaphorical container that you hold in your hand of feeling. I don't know if that makes any fucking sense. But fathomless, it seems to be the origin of all things. It blunts all sharp edges. It unties all tangles. It harmonizes all lights. It unites the world into one whole. So, because nothing can stay extreme, we can sharpen something. But over time, it's going to dull. Things that get tangled naturally over time are going to at least decompose into a pile of ash. if not, if you had a tangle on that ocean floor, I don't know, Everything's just to get fucked up. But over time, these harshnesses that we perceive in reality, they could potentially get softened out and untangled. And not to say go be lazy, but you'd be surprised by what this non-action can do. You know, and that goes back to the third verse. So at the end of the third verse, it says, practice non-ado and everything will be in order. Because if you don't set up aversions, and if you don't set up desires, if you don't set up attachments, if you don't play the game, you might be surprised by what not desiring will do. That's the non-ado. Yet it seems to exist forever. I don't know whose child it is. It seems to be the common ancestor of all, the father of things. So, that's interesting. I like how it calls it out as a mother and as a father. I've always been confounded by the androgyny of things. And so, if you don't know the word, it's androgynous. And androgynous means not to have female or male characteristics, which is hard to conceive of in a hypersexualized society, if you happen to be in one. What is androgynous? You know, it's something I, like, aspire to. I don't want to be held by these norms that make me a man, or these norms that make me ashamed to act like a female. Like, what the fuck? You know? Like, I know I'm not the most hyper alpha male person out there. I'm not gay. You know, I don't desire men, and I'm not sure if I desire women either. Like, that's the crazy part about it. Like, I'm definitely drawn towards women. I have a son, you know, and even to this day, in moments, I notice myself appealing to and seeing women. But I haven't been in a relationship in such a long time. Part of that's because I have a son, and I'm like, fuck that, I don't have time for that bullshit. But also, I don't know if I desire it. It's a hard concept to get into a relationship, you know. So androgynous, I like it. I like to think of myself as androgynous. And in religious aspects, religious backgrounds, you know, androgynous is like the angels were androgynous. I personally think gods don't have sex. Well, they probably have sex, like in the acts, but I don't think gods, male or female. You know, I'm sure many old pantheons like Zeus and Hera and Aphrodite and those ones have, you know, and then there's even, you have male and female aspects that incur into language, you know, like Spanish, every word is male or female context, even German. So, like, I feel like it's so ingrained, you know, and maybe it's normal, maybe it's completely normal for this sort of dichotomy of sex to be. But I think all men and women have both masculine and feminine sides. And I lean in the middle, you know? Like, so I find it interesting when the Tao, this force of change, and just to quickly sum up, I kind of think Tao is this present form of entropy that's mixed with this forward momentum of life and whatever universe is going on. Things come together, and when they come together, they fall apart. Push, pull, hot, cold, up, down, duality, you know. And there's many other non-dual forms too. But you can get value from non-duality and dualism. And within the Tao, you have the masculine and the feminine, the yielding and the strong, the yin and the yang. So, I find it purposeful and I find it valuable. Yeah. So I got two more. I got some personal analogies that I've been working through that have happened in the past recent couple of days. And if you'll just hold real quick. I appreciate your patience. You can have some if you want. So, I was sitting on the couch the other day, and my roommates come in, and they tell me the story about the Popo, one of the dogs that are in the home, got her nails stuck on the inside of the couch. And, you know, I just saw this coming. As soon as they started to explain the situation, I just see it vividly in my head. And I'm just like, oh, God, that's awful. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen a cat stuck up on, like, on a window pane. It's insanely cruel to hear the noise of their suffering. At least for me. I don't find suffering easy to witness. For any creature, even a plant dying's hard. So she gets her foot, her nail stuck in the couch. But you know why she got her nail stuck in the couch? So she's obsessed, completely over the moon for fetch. And it's cool. So a little bit of backstory. The Popo, she's a beautiful German Shepherd. Just one of the best dogs that I have ever seen in my life. Like, just an absolute joy to be around. But she's born with one valve or one chamber gone or something from her heart. Her heart's, like, completely upside down. Like, wow, it's hard. You know, and so she loves this game fetch, but you throw the ball for her and she makes it like 5, 10 feet, 15 feet, you know, down the stairs up, like, and she comes back and she's already breathing heavy. You can only toss to her twice max, but usually, like, so poor Popo, but she loves it and she's very dedicated and so she's very smart, and so, like, she'll play games with you. Like, one of the things that I have witnessed her doing is, like, I'll be doing dishes and she'll drop it in the dishwasher, so I have to retrieve it from the dishwasher. But even if I toss it on the floor very close to the dishwasher, that still is part of her game. And so she has already won because I've moved it and now she can place it back in the dishwasher and we're playing. Another example, the freezer. You know, like, you'll go try to get something out of the freezer, she'll drop in the freezer, you have to move it. When you're sitting down, she'll drop underneath you, so you have to move it. Like, she likes me because I'm a softie, and it's hard for me to tell her no. So I've thrown it for her often. But so there's your backstory. Very dedicated Popo. Very dedicated, you know, on her game doggo. And so she's stuck. And they hear her and just fucking bloody murder. And for some reason, you know, this made me move. And, like, I wanted to write about it. I don't know why. I wasn't even there. But I felt the visual image so quickly. Like, I saw it in my head before it was described to me because I'd seen similar situations happen. And this made my brain go, woo. Like, what are you really associating to? Are you projecting? Are you, like, what really is appealing of this situation to you? And so, you know, I was like, fuck. So I started writing. And here's kind of what I came up with. How do I relate to this Popo? In this exact situation, you know, and life is this game that we play. We have all these rules, and sometimes it can be pleasant to play life's rules. You know, it can be nice to play certain aspects of the game. You know, certain parts of the game are fun, and that's what makes us want to keep playing the game, just like the dog with her toy. But what can happen a lot is that we can overuse a toy, or we can become ridiculous in our urges and our drive towards these things. And we end up hurting ourselves and wedging ourselves in window screens or in couches, in couch coils. And I can certainly relate, because there's many times that I put myself in very shitty situations, and part of the hard part is, in hindsight, I'm just like, fuck, you idiot. Like, why would you do that? If you hadn't been so obsessed with this game, it's a game, bro. It's it's something that can bring pleasure, but it's not really going to make you who you are. Like, and you're going to hurt yourself and wedge yourself in a couch and just fuck yourself up because of this obsession. Have you even forgotten that it's a game? Have you forgotten? Are you playing it real? Are you convinced that the Matrix is reality? And it's not like a real simulation. At least I don't find much credence in these simulation theories, but maybe we'll discuss it in the future. But like we make our own simulations. We make up our own illusions. We are our own Maya. We are our own systems of delusion. At least I am my own system of delusion. Maybe you relate to me when I say it. But it's highly probable, it's highly possible that I certainly feel like that dog. And I've certainly been saved. And I've certainly been yelping because I fucked myself up so bad because of an obsession with a game that I've made. And I've helped write the rules. So, I got one last analogy for you before I start to wrap this little fucker up. So, I really like this. And it's on ideas, which is my favorite thing, you know, because I play with words. I love words. To go back to the beginning of this episode, words are fickle things. They're fickle bottles. You know, and I'm etching on that bottle just like everybody else. But I love how potent. Because if I couldn't pass bottles along, I would feel completely alone. And so the best thing in my reality is to be able to play with these words. And to be able to make Lego bricks of ideas. And to build stupid houses and share them. To build my gingerbread house. So, this person considers ideas like fishing. My question to you is, do you think your ideas are strictly yours? Like, did you make them wholly? Like, are your ideas a segment of your being? When you make up an idea, is it a little piece of you? If you made up something completely unique, which does something original exist? But if you were to make something that you deemed completely original, is that a piece of you? And if you were to die and somebody were to talk about that, would you consider that a piece of your being? Would that be a part of invulnerability or immortality? And I feel like many, many great people over time have tried to set up establishments and to make up beautiful things and to make up technological achievements, computers, cars, space travel. You pick it. It doesn't matter what it is, you know, but is that strictly a part of you? Is that as much a part of you as your finger is, or your eyeball, or your cells, or your semen, or your eggs? Not to get gross. I'm not sure, and I'm not going to declare anything, and I'm not going to say that I have any sort of diction for what reality is, but I'm certainly doubtful for which way it flows, one way or the other. But consider that ideas are not strictly part of who you are. It would be like fishing, or SpongeBob catching bat jellyfish with his net. We catch ideas like a receiver of consciousness, like our brain is like this antenna and we pick things up. And something just kind of flows by and it's like, ooh, that feels good, I like that. And you snatch it up and you're like, bleh, bleh, bleh. And either you regurgitate it or you make something with it, which feels even better, because then you can pass it to somebody. But guess what? I think sometimes when you give somebody else an idea, that thing gets over there, and it probably feels pretty fucking original to the person you give it to. I don't know if I'm talking bullshit. I'm not. I don't know. So the fishing analogy, to catch an idea, we catch ideas. We don't make them. It's not like we urinate into a cup and this is my idea. Here you go. It's rather amber today. And this is what I believe about the world. And you drink this and then you'll have my idea inside you. Fuck you. You know, it's just like we caught it and it's like, I like it. This is pretty. I'm going to write it down and I'm going to talk to people about it because it intrigues me. And my personal motivation is when something intrigues me, I want other people to feel just as intrigued as I was. And I don't think that's impossible either. I don't, the bottle might be pretty damn murky, but when you pass along symbols, if they can glean enough of your symbols, I think they resonate very similarly because we have very similar equipment. Just like we have very similar equipment to make vesicles, we have very similar equipment for interpretation as well. So we've caught our idea. Fishing net, you know. I mean, that's not a good sound. What does a reel sound like? I need a soundboard. Maybe I'm not good at personal sound effects. So we've caught our idea. And here's where the second part of the analogy just fucked me up. So it's cooking. So we have our fish. The person I was listening to said this. You a cook never claims to have said they made the fish. It's not like they personally manifested the muscle fibers and the bone structures and the fat of this fish. No cook could ever manifest a piece of corn or spice. They could go gather them, but they don't make them. You don't make spaghetti. You prepare the fish. A cook prepares it. So by gaining this item from somebody else, it's not like they're giving them a part of you. They've made something with very similar ingredients that you have the capacity to make as well. And they've given you this thing. And by receiving it and by enjoying it, the biggest thing is that you have the capacity to make it and to pass it to somebody else. And that's fucking beautiful to me. And I'll be passionate about that. So we don't make anything. We prepare our ideas. At least it's a possibility. Don't take me as any affirmatives or any totalities. And I like that one. That analogy definitely got me. I've been thinking about it. I've shared it. When I hear something really good from somebody, it's like this itch in the back of my brain. It's part of my motivation for wanting to do this, because the more people talking, the biggest benefit I could get from any of this is if you hit me up on email at Brandon with an O, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, W as in walrus, V as in Victor, O-G-T, @gmail.com. You hit me up, we can talk about this shit. If you ever hear anything you don't like, I'll call myself out on the show. I'm dead serious. I don't have many attachments to any of these ideas. And if I'm wrong, let's fucking figure this shit out. You know, the biggest thing I want to do is to start conversation. And if you're intrigued by any of these things that I talk about, it'd be really cool if you got intrigued and curious about anything, even if it's not what I was talking about. Just be curious. I think it's so valuable to go out and to look and to philosophize and to think and to be like, ooh, I think this is cool. You know, it's very valuable. So, I think I got one last thing to talk about. So, I've been taking this Tai Chi class. He's a real cool dude. I'm going to call him Sensei J. It's like a Tai Chi, Kung Fu, ancient Chinese medicine. He's a real cool guy. It's really all over the place. You know, very loose, very chill. Which is why I felt so comfortable. And I've been talking too much in his class, so I need to get to a point where I shut the fuck up. Because, you know, I was listening to this, not to digress again, but I was listening to another podcast where it was like this guy from prison, and he was talking about these rules of power. I guess this is some book. Maybe I can look it up and I'll quote it again. So there's these, like, mini rules of power. And one of the things is, like, you never make your authority figure insecure. As soon as you make your authority figure insecure, you fucked yourself. And I have a lot of philosophical knowledge, but I'm fucking stupid when it comes to fighting and kung fu. And so as soon as he starts to bring up Chinese medicine things that I'm even adjacent to being comfortable with, I'm just like, oh, I like the Tao. This is my history of Siddhartha and my opinions on it. And fucking I like took up like 10, 15 minutes of his class. It's fucked. You know? Like, so that's something I gotta stop. It's real fun. You know, but so one of the things that he was talking about that I just found really cool was, do you ever consider, do you have a mental image of yourself, like inside? Like, I have many, but like strictly structural. Like, you're walking down the street, you close your eyes. Can you feel your arms? Close your eyes right now. Feel your fingers. Do you know where your feet are? Can you consider where your stomach is? I feel you can. And that's called your proprioceptive, I think. Yeah, maybe. It's your proprioceptive sense. It's your mental image of where you are. And now it's based off touch. It's based off neuronal activity. It's based off a bunch of shit nobody understands. And I feel it's highly important. It's something that I neglected and that I didn't pay attention within my own being for a very long time. And that's why I was so awkward. Still am awkward. Working on it. So, you have this proprioceptive sense of where you are. And I've been working on nurturing that and growing that and being more aware of where my body awareness is. I've been doing yoga. I'm taking this class for that purpose because I've never been physically adept, and so I'm trying to practice. And it's so what he got into that I found very interesting was he began to talk about noticing where other people are. Imagine where the people are in your home. Close your eyes when you're talking to somebody. Can you sense where their body is? You probably can. What the fuck? What is that? How can I sense where somebody else is if I don't feel them? Maybe mirror neurons are very important. We start to associate with how other people are feeling. When we see somebody else get in pain, they did this test with people where they had people in this room and they got shocked. And when you watch somebody else get hurt, you feel their pain. At least part of your brain triggers in a very similar response as the apparent person getting hurt. And that, they think that's because of this concept called mirror neurons. But can mirror neurons, like, I don't know, it gets spooky and weird. Because, like, if I'm very familiar with a person, I feel I can judge where they are pretty damn well. And what is that? Pretty weird. I'm very grateful. Very grateful for a lot of things in this life. I'm very grateful for the ability to have people to take care of me and to take care of my leg last week. I can't tell you enough. With all my fear and all my phobia and all my distrust of this profession of medical, whatever, I'm so grateful of the men and women who worked on me that day and who are making me more comfortable once I get past this recovery. I'm so grateful of my circumstances. I'm so grateful of my happenings. I'm so grateful of my job. I'm so grateful of my son. There's so many beautiful, beautiful, beautiful things in my life. I'm so grateful. And I'm so grateful for you. Yes, you, right there, wherever you are, if you're working, if you're driving, if you're cleaning your house, if you're sitting at home trying to kill time, if you're listening to this podcast simply because I asked you to, thank you. It's so important for us to go talk to other people, and I hope that you go get curious and that you go out and you find things to be intrigued about. And when you get curious, the only thing I ask you, the only thing you have to pay me, the only thing you have to do for me, please go share it with somebody else and see if they're curious too. Thank you. Thank you so much for breathing. Thank you so much for waking up this morning. Thank you so much for listening. And I hope you have a wonderful evening. Good night.